We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome on in. This is the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. We are officially 1 week away from the first round of the NFL draft getting started. We're going to get into some potential first round fits for these receivers, these guys that are going to be on your fantasy teams. Where might they land? We're going to try to answer that. We're also going to dig in a little further on the tight end class, a little bit underserved in the fantasy community in this particular draft cycle. Beyond Brock Bowers, it turns out there are some guys that could be making impacts this season and beyond. Let's start the show. Welcome on in. This is the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, John McKechnie. That is Mario Puig. Today we are getting into some first round draft fits. Going to be looking at the skill position groups as per usual. You know, this is a fantasy focused podcast that we've got going here. So we're going to try to figure out where exactly the likes of Malik Nabers and Roma Dunze, A.D. Mitchell, Brian Thomas, Ladd McConkey, even where they might end up if they are indeed selected in the first round. We're also going to get into some tight ends a little bit later on in the show. But first off, got a little bit of some NFL news that might have some draft ramifications. I think it's been long stated, long expected that the Chargers would be in the market for a running back in this upcoming draft. I think that the offseason moves that the Chargers have done kind of signaled something to that effect. But a potential wrench has been thrown in that as far as people maybe betting on, say, Blake Corum going to the Chargers, you know, the Michigan connection and so on, because as of Wednesday night, one J.K. Dobbins is now a Los Angeles Charger. So now they have taken the Baltimore backfield. This is akin, of course, to Johnny Unitas going to the San Diego Chargers back in the day, back in, I believe it was 70s, something like that. My dad would be mad at me for not knowing like the exact date of that one. But beyond that, your thoughts on, you know, the band all being back together in LA with Greg Roman, Gus Edwards, and J.K. Dobbins all in tow.
So I acknowledge Dobbins has been hurt a lot and in really bad ways. Like his ACL tear from 2 years ago was not just an ACL tear. It was something like the a femoral tendon or something. Some kind of thing was like ripped from a bone that you never hear of in any capacity, let alone bone tearings. And then he had the Achilles the most recent year. However, as bad as that stuff is, I think those are both injuries that he can come back from. And because last year he already came back from the knee thing, he just got hurt right away. And the Achilles, another major, you know, another bump in the road for sure, but he's still young enough to come back from that. Like he would be expected to bounce back from that anyway. So it's, I think people understandably, and NFL teams understandably, kind of look at cases like his irrationally. Like they look at what are, I think, more likely two improbably, you know, unlucky instances, and then go like, oh, this is a trend, as opposed to like, maybe it's very much not a trend and he's due for some good luck for once finally. Mm-hmm. Not many cases comparable at all, but Garrison Hurst is one guy back in the 90s where like people thought his career was over after he had some kind of knee thing. I don't know if that what team he was with initially, but he ended up having a good career after that, you know, a couple years later. And Dobbins is a super talented player. This is not just some running back. This is a guy who's, I think, a top 10 talent at running back if he's healthy, and it just hasn't happened at all. But at Ohio State, he took on big workloads, and he, you know, was, I don't think he had any particularly noteworthy injuries there, if I remember correctly. So, you know, yeah, he played 14 games each of his 3 years at Ohio State while taking on big workloads over the three. So, and then didn't really get hurt his first year in Baltimore. So this is 2 years of bad luck, potentially, out of 6 years. And what if he just has 4 years without such bad luck after this? You know, I think this is a player who, despite a lot of uncertainty, has a ton of upside at basically no risk for the Chargers. So I think it's a great signing. Obviously, it's one of those things, like if he has a big season, he'll all of a sudden cost a lot to keep. And that can kind of become a difficult, you know, political situation for a team where it's like, are you going to risk overpaying now for something, you know, when you could have just signed this guy to a 2 or 3 year deal and you didn't. And you know, are you really going to buy at the highest possible point? But I think those are kind of good problems to have. And with a quarterback like Herbert, a coach like Harbaugh, who I think is good, I just think a player like Dobbins is he could hold a lot of, you know, positive sway over the Chargers' 2024 season. However, I still think they're going to add a running back in the first four rounds of the draft, because both Dobbins and especially Edwards have injury concerns. I mean, Gus Edwards, he should have been a monster at Miami, and he basically never got off the ground there because he kept getting hurt, and that's why he had to transfer to Rutgers. But and obviously he had the ACL tear and some other things in the NFL too. So those guys can both get hurt quickly. And I think Edwards is clearly the more like chronic injury type of the two. He doesn't have just like bad luck injuries. He's got a lot of injuries over a lot of years. So yeah, I think they could still add Corum if Corum falls to the third round, which I kind of think he will, but they don't need Corum. They could, you know, if Dobbins and Edwards for once have good luck, those two, I think, are a pretty beastly tandem, actually.
Yeah, I think so as well. I've been front seat for, you know, some of it, but, you know, you obviously wish that last year went differently. I mean, he looked so good out of the gate, Dobbins, that is, against the Texans. You know, the first two quarters of the first game of the season, I'm like, you guys just let me have 20% of my best ball portfolio be fifth round Dobbins, you donkeys. But then a lot of 18th round Gus Edwards ultimately paid off as well. So it all came out in the wash. But, you know, I think it's a talented tandem. Like you said, there's injury concerns for both players. So it would make sense to continue to add depth back there, and we certainly expect the Chargers to be a bit more of a run heavy outfit this season than we've been used to under Kellen Moore and even before that during Justin Herbert's career. So would make sense to bolster that, but I'm still unsure where the Chargers go in the first round or what they even do with that number five overall pick. But either way, I think Dobbins, the talent is just so apparently there, and I know it's scary to project a running back coming off of an Achilles, but at the same time, like I think you can look at the bright side, the potential for the good luck and the basically like no risk in the contract. It's not like they gave him this huge deal or anything like that. So I think that was a shrewd move for the Chargers. I personally wish the Ravens had done that, get some insurance, because Keaton Mitchell, you know, looking kind of dicey for the start of this upcoming season. I think that Derrick Henry kind of needs to, you know, not be given 300 carries anymore. I don't think that's the most efficient way to use him. So would have liked to see Dobbins back in Baltimore, but on the Chargers now, which are basically the West Coast Ravens, I thought it was a good signing, and I hope he does well. Let's get on over to discuss some of the first round. Again, we are a week away officially from the first round beginning. I believe the draft's in Detroit this year. We have pretty firm expectations at this point that it's going to be quarterback in the first three picks, potentially even the first four picks. But we do kind of have it established on this pod, at least. We are of the belief that Marvin Harrison Jr. will end up being an Arizona Cardinal one way or the other. But where do we think that the next two, where do we think that Malik Nabers and Roma Dunze end up?
Well, I guess this is going to be another one of those things where there's a little bit of a divide between what the latest reporting is and what kind of makes sense to us, or to me at least. But I believe it was Daniel Jeremiah. It might have been a variety of reporters, actually, who were, I guess this was a couple weeks ago, were suggesting that Malik Nabers might even be the wide receiver one on a bunch of draft boards and things, you know, superlatives of that sort. And that kind of was fishy to me all along. I can understand some teams being high on Nabers, but what I can't understand is why there was such a just push for him in the draft reporting scene all of a sudden. It was as if like something of a memo got sent out, you know, and especially, you know, earlier in the draft cycle, Bill Belichick said something to this effect yesterday. I think up until like right before the draft, most of the information you see about the draft reporting is from player agents. And if Nabers' agent is sending out things to a bunch of people like, by the way, the Chargers said they love Nabers the most, and so did all these other teams. Like, is that reporter going to call all those teams and ask for comments? And would any of those teams give them comments? And if they don't get comments, or even if they're refuted, will that reporter not mention it anyway? I don't know. It's not solid info to me, is all I'm saying. Like, the Nabers maybe being the first receiver, I don't believe it. Harrison obviously is going to go ahead of him. I think the question is, will Odunze also go ahead of Nabers? And I'm increasingly thinking he will, because it's getting to feel like one of those things where, and I still like Nabers a lot. I think Nabers is a totally really good prospect. I think he should be a top 10 pick or top 8 pick. And if Harrison and Odunze were not in this draft, I'd say, sure, take Nabers in the top 5. Why not? But I think it would be irresponsible to take Nabers over Odunze, actually. And I know Nabers has great production, especially if you're high on Brian Thomas. Nabers' production at LSU is just insane, because he drew so much more target share than Thomas. And if Thomas is a good player, then Nabers must be some degree better, you know, along with that target share distinction. But right. His pro day, Nabers' pro day was not very good. He ran in kind of like the high 4.4s. The jumps were great. He had like a 42 vert high broad jump. Certainly those kinds of numbers were expected of him. But if Nabers was going to outdo Harrison and Odunze at the NFL level, I think he would need to do it by being so much better of a downfield in yards after the catch threat than them, to make up for what are probably going to be certain limitations that he just can't catch them on, you know, especially kind of like the rebounding game, you know, boxing people out. Like, he's 6'2", and Odunze and Harrison are both 6'3", 210 or so. So there's just, you know, there's certain limitations that come with physical limitations like that. And you have to make it up in other ways. And a high 4.4, is not really what I have in mind for that downfield application. Like, I'd like him to be a sub 4.4, at least low 4.4 guy. And B, Odunze had better 40 times at the combine. He had like a 4.45 or whatever, and he did it at 12 pounds heavier. So they both have great production. Odunze's athletic testing is clearly better than Nabers', though, and it's getting to be one of those things where you wait for the actually effective argument for Nabers to come about. You know, there's something missing, right? Like, Odunze seems to be clearing them on these boxes, and yet the narrative is still sort of staying like cold on Odunze. And then it's one of those things, I think, if you look around, no one actually is really explaining themselves, and everybody's saying it just because they think they're supposed to say it, and they think everyone else is thinking it. But if everyone does like anonymous voting on this, I think Odunze might come out ahead, because it's just, he can do everything, you know. He could be him and Marvin Harrison could actually could absolutely be like an AJ Green, Julio Jones situation. And Nabers could be something very good still, but I don't know. Odunze, I don't know what you're supposed, I don't know where the criticism is of him as a receiver, you know.
No, it's hard to nitpick what Odunze's profile, you know, speaks to. Whereas Nabers, I think he's less complete. I think, you know, you going into the athletic testing portion of the draft cycle, you would have said, like, well, he has both Harrison and Odunze beat on the long speed factor, like the big play element. I would have assumed that, yeah. Absolutely. And then for him to, I believe, skip the testing at the combine, do it at the pro day at LSU, which obviously tends to be a bit friendlier on your times and everything, and it still didn't like really pop. That to me, I think it is enough of potentially like a separator between him and Odunze specifically, to where I do think that Odunze is the second receiver off the board. I think the odds on that are actually pretty decent. I don't remember them off the top of my head. I want to say something like 3-1.
The Giants should take him. If the Chargers don't take him at 5, then in my opinion, the Giants would be complete fools to not take Odunze at 6.
So do you think that the Chargers will go that route, or do you think that they're shopping this pick, or do you think that they're at all sort of a little scared off because of what happened with the Quentin Johnston pick a year ago? Or do you think they're just like, you know what, rinse it, you know, it's a new regime in there, let's start fresh, get our, you know, true number one receiver. It's a class that's built to take that in and justify that in the top 5, so just go with it? Or you know, do you see them going in a different direction?
I really don't know, but if the Chargers stay at 5, I think they need to take Odunze. And if they're spooked about Quentin Johnston, then it's like they should see it as that much more urgent, in my opinion, to get a receiver. Because it's like, if he's busted, then what exactly are you going to do? Josh Palmer is a wide receiver 3, in my opinion, and he's your wide receiver 1 right now. That's brutal. And with a reality like that, you either have to address it by adding a player like Odunze, who I think right off the bat can at least give them something like a 23% target share at above average efficiency. You either need to get a player like him, or you need to prepare to kind of hibernate the offense and start running a lot more. And if you're going to run a lot more, you got to get better at running. And if you're going to get better at running, there's certain things you can do, but their offensive line is pretty set at 4 of 5 spots. I think it's just Trey Pipkins at right tackle that might be up for review. And if they do trade back, and if the Chargers are looking to trade back and they do successfully, I think the Vikings at 11 make a ton of sense for that. Then I think Odunze is long gone. Neighbors is long gone too. So they, at that point, I think are committing to the, like the hibernation method and going that much more, and, you know, reinforcing the run game, the 11th pick, at which point the best option I think is taking JC Latham, who for them would be a right tackle out of Alabama. I think that guy looks really good. I know there's some of the more offensive line technique Twitter guys have pointed out that he's got some concerns, Latham does, in the way that he sets up in pass protection, but he still won all the time in college at a really young age, and he has super, you know, he has great, you know, traits athletically. So if he's winning in college at kind of like an age deficit and he's still not using perfect technique, then I almost just as easily see that as an upside indicator rather than a concern, because it's like, okay, well, what if he fixes it? What if it's a coachable thing and he fixes it? Then he just goes crazy. So I think him at right tackle, the more finesse kind of guy, Slater at left tackle, that would be that would be the kind of offensive line that you can really run at high volume behind, and the kind of thing where you tell the defense, like, we're running it, and you still get the yardage you want. So if they don't get a new Odunze type, I think they need to start thinking along those lines, you know, and I think a guy like Latham is a way to get there.
Yeah, he's a big fella. You know, everyone, you know, points out that Joe Alt, being as tall as he is, you know, 6'8" and a half, but he's 321. Latham, a little more compact, if you will, at 6'5" and 3/4", 342 pounds with 35 and 1/8 inch arms, compared to Alt, who has 34 and 1/4 inch arms. So Latham definitely can pack a punch there. And, you know, I tend to trust an Alabama offensive tackle, not that you don't trust Notre Dame tackle to be certain, but yeah, I think, you know, assuming that the chalk hits and Alt is the first one off the board, I think there's a case for Latham to be the next guy up. The Oregon State guy, I don't want to butcher his name, he's also in that discussion, but he might be, you know, a tick.
I feel
below,
like, he's a right tackle guard. Okay. Yeah, but he looks. I love him as a guard, right tackle prospect at the very least.
Yeah, he's an absolute mauler. No doubt about that. So
this is an awesome offensive line class, by the way. I actually think that Troy Fontenot from Washington, apparently some people see him as a guard. I think he's a left tackle, but he's going to be killer wherever he plays too.
I'm biased, but I always loved Amarius Mims.
Him too.
He's ridiculous. He's almost 6'8" and he's 340 pounds and 36 1/8 inch arms. Big fella. Maybe a little bit light on in-game experience, but I think that, if you're buying the marble, it's a good slab of marble to mold.
He's like the Tyler Smith pick this year, kind of like out of Tulsa. Tyler Smith for the Cowboys. It was like, there were all these complaints, all these criticisms of him as a prospect, saying like he holds all the time at Tulsa, he's raw and all this, and then he was 99th percentile everything as an athletic tester in Dallas. It was like, we don't care, and they drafted him, and he's sick pretty much.
Dallas is good at finding the O linemen. So tying that off, when it comes to the Chargers and their potential fits, again, I think offensive tackle or wide receiver, if they do stay put at five, makes plenty of sense. And you mentioned the Giants as another team that's a candidate to take a wide receiver. I think they need it. I think they need that infusion of talent. Like, as much as I liked Wandale Robinson, or as much as I can be excited by the downfield ability of one Jalen Hyatt, like, there's still nothing like totally complete. It's pretty hodgepodge, pretty smashed together as far as that wide receiver room goes. We know the passing game is probably just inherently not going to be good, but you still have another year of Daniel Jones. So I'm not completely sold on the idea of them taking JJ McCarthy, which has been rumored a bit late here in draft season. So do the Giants, you think, work as a fit for Neighbors?
I guess. I don't think it's the right pick for them if Odunze is on the board. If Odunze is gone at five, I don't know. Neighbors is a good prospect, but if you're seeing it from the Giants' view of competing now or trying to get better now, I'm not sure Neighbors is the best pick. He's like a little too, not redundant to Slayton, but Slayton is already good at some things that Neighbors would crowd him out of, yes, as a downfield function, but you're just kind of making a pick to bench Slayton. Then I feel like you're not replacing someone who you actually should be replacing, who's more like at the very least the more like possession oriented, physicality oriented receiver rep. They got Wandale in the slot. I still think he has a shot to be pretty good. Nothing certain there, obviously, but yeah, it's just they need some bulk at receiver ideally, and someone who can actually be a volume capable receiver, chain moving type routes. So with Neighbors, my concern is the big plays will be there. He'll be great at that, but they'll have sort of a void in the offense for consistency and the reliability of moving the chains every so often. And if you force Neighbors to be the guy who makes those catches, he can probably make them. It's just, I don't have as much confidence in him making those plays as Odunze. So, I would rather if Neighbors is off the board at six and they're for some reason, or sorry, if Odunze is off the board by five, then if I'm the Giants, I'm really trying to trade back, I guess. I don't even know what. Yeah, they would be in a difficult spot, I think, at that point. But I guess the conventional reporting right now says they would take Neighbors, and I guess some of the reporting would actually say they would take Neighbors over Odunze. So, yeah, I have no idea, clearly.
It's tricky. I think Arizona is an interesting inflection point, whether they move back or they stay put at four. I think we're in agreement that they should just stay there at four and grab Harrison, because I don't think that they're a threat to win the West necessarily, but with the expanded playoff pool, I don't think Arizona is maybe as far away as some people may believe. But after that, you would have the potential fourth quarterback still available, and I think that's where things get interesting for both the Chargers and the Giants, because I think Minnesota has been linked or kind of circled by everybody as the team that's going to trade up. But like, what's Denver going to do necessarily? Because are they really going to go into next year with Jared Stidham?
They're at serious risk of it, depending on what they do. They don't have that much ammo. They have as little ammo as, anybody, pretty much. They have that 12th pick, and I think they just need to trade down unless something weird happens where some, I don't know what player it would be, unless some player that's just not supposed to be at 12 somehow falls there. They got to move back because they just don't have the picks.
They have a stockpile of fifth rounders. That's about it. They don't have a second. They don't have a fourth. But buddy, you need a fifth. Denver's your guy.
They have one late fourth rounder, but yeah, it's not for the level of need that they have across their roster. It's just trivial, the draft capital that they have. So they have to go back from 12, I think. And even if it's just some, you know, if it's a bag of chips, that's the best offer they get. They take those chips, hold on to them tight, because you need all the help you can get. And I think the Broncos are in this weird limbo, you know, in between state where they can't get any of the coveted quarterbacks. And I guess, I'm saying, you know, Caleb, Drake May, JJ McCarthy, Jaden Daniels, but they really need a quarterback as much as any of those teams that are going to take any of those guys. And they just kind of have to move back. That's another for that reason too. They just need to move back because they're facing the pretty concrete reality that they're going into next year with Stidham as their starting quarterback, or they have to get Bo Nix or Michael Penix at some point. And 12 seems kind of wrong to me. I do not believe the Michael Penix going like top 15 talk or whatever. If it does happen, I think it's a really bad pick. And I guess maybe that's just, maybe that's the explanation for it being a real possibility. I don't know. Cause like if Jaden Daniels goes second to Washington, I'm sorry. Like that, the only explanation for that is like, all you guys are getting fired. That's a terrible idea. Giving Cliff Kingsbury Jaden Daniels, are you a maniac? What is wrong with you? So yeah, there's the possibility that the Raiders at 13 or the Broncos at 12 take Penix. I would be shocked. I'd be confused, but that happens all the time. So I guess I should consider it a real possibility. It's just that I think it's not quite as bad as the Hendon Hooker case from last year, but I think it's kind of along those lines, you know, the way that the draft got closer and there were all these reports about Hendon Hooker might go in the first round and then he goes to the third round and now he's, you know, Jared Goff's just kind of indefinite backup. So I don't think Penix or Nix are at risk of that, but I think they both kind of sooner belong in the early second round. So whereas the Raiders could trade up from the second round to take Penix as a second first round pick after taking a corner or something at the 13th pick, the Broncos don't have a second round pick to trade up from. So they just kind of have to trade back. And yeah, it's like, unless they can trade back twice, they might have to take Nix or Penix, I guess, around like 18 or wherever someone might be willing to trade up from. And it's not super obvious who would. It's like, it almost have to be for a corner, I think, unless something unexpected happens in the top 12. It's like, that's where the corner run starts. And I don't know if any of the corners are really worth trading up for that aggressively. It's like the teams that would be looking for those corners might get them anyway if the Broncos don't take them, you know? So it's right. They're in a tough spot, Denver is.
Yeah, so they might need like multiple dance partners because, again, we talked about their draft capital scarcity, this sort of weird spot that they're in the draft order, at least in the first round. Picking 12th, again, you don't have the ammo to move up into the top five, and no one is going to trade up from like 27 to 12 for any of those guys that's just not a thing that happens. So they might have to wheel and deal twice, and that's, you know, pretty hard to pull off. And I'm not necessarily certain that the Denver GM has the steady hands nor the technology, to quote the great McLovin, to pull off a procedure such as that. So Denver, tough spot indeed. Before we get on over to our next potential first round fits, we do have a message from our friends over at On Demand DFS. Do you ever think back to the golden days of fantasy football, you know, when it was all about the love of the game, the camaraderie, and yes, the bragging rights? Well, our friends at On Demand DFS are bringing those days back with a revolutionary app that's changing the game for fantasy fans everywhere. Gone are the days of confusing entry fees, playing against the unknown masses or juggling multiple apps to trash talk with your league mates. On Demand DFS is here to streamline your fantasy football experience, making it more about strategy, fun, and most importantly, the community. With On Demand DFS, you can create a contest in seconds, invite your friends, and you're off to the races. No entry fees, no gimmicks, just pure fantasy football bliss. And here's the kicker. You're not limited to current season players. Imagine crafting your dream lineup from over 5,000 NFL legends and today's stars using real historical data to simulate the action. And for those who hate the wait, you'll love Turbo Mode. Contests wrap up in minutes, not hours, keeping the excitement going all week long. Download the On Demand DFS app now and get started with a 30-day free trial. Dive into a fantasy football experience that's rich in history, strategy, and most importantly, fun. It's time to create your legacy with the ultimate lineup of legends and live out your fantasy football dreams like never before. Again, that was On Demand DFS. Go check those guys out. Download that app and get started on that 30-day free trial.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Okay, so looking back a little bit further, I want to get into where Brock Bowers might end up, because he's obviously, you know, the kind of far and away the tight end one in this class, the only one that's really getting consideration and first round buzz. But where does it start necessarily? Does it start with the Jets, as you mocked previously in what you wrote up a couple of weeks back? Or does he fall a little bit further, and you know, how far could that fall go?
I guess I'm the wrong person to ask because I can't see the fall. That's like a hypothetical. I just have a mental block against imagining. So I think he's gone by 10. I think the Jets probably should be really happy to get him there. The Bears might be a candidate to take him at 9. I have trouble imagining the spacing of their offense with both Cole Kmet, Brock Bowers, and then Keenan Allen and DJ Moore. If instead of Keenan Allen, they had some, you know, skinny, fast guy, then I could see that more easily. But like Keenan Allen, he's not pushing down the field, especially not at this point. So might be a little bit of a lopsided like field if you go with Bowers as the Bears. But he's also the type of talent where it's justified, I think, taking him, even if you don't have the immediate full capacity usage for him. Like, but if Bowers only catches 60 passes this year on some offense that's just you know, loaded, and if he's not the main guy, it's fine. You know, it's like if he's not going to be one of your top two pass catchers for a year or two, it's still worth taking him now, because there's, you know, you're not going to get someone like him in the next 2 years. So he's going to be really good, I think, wherever he goes. And I think he's also I think Bowers is the kind of player who, wherever he goes, he's going to give the team reason to sort of rearrange things to feature him. And be it Chicago, be it the Jets, I think Bowers falling past 10 just seems certainly wrong to me, and I have trouble imagining it too. So granted, I admit, like, it's not like I can name four or five teams that would obviously take him in the top 10, but I feel like Bowers is good enough, and I think, like, once some of those other top prospects get taken in the top, like, 6, 7, 8, Bowers to pretty much every team from that group of players would be, you know, one of the top ranked players on the board, if not the top guy.
Right, exactly. It's hard to imagine a big board that doesn't have him among the top 10 players in this class. Of, you know, it will be the classic, you know, do we go with fit / need, or do we just take the best player available? I've seen some rumblings of Vegas as a potential target for Brock Bowers, but that feels goldfish brain to me. To borrow,
who said that?
Saw it out there. You can see anything on x.com, of course, though.
They are still really good. I mean, that's one of the very few teams that actually probably shouldn't take Bowers. Like, or if they do take Bowers, they need to actually commit to giving both of those guys 700 plus snaps. And like, if they waver on that, then they should consider that it a, you know, a botched effort, I think.
No, 100%. Like, I think Mayer, he's someone that I'm going to be having a lot of in best ball
really
this
good.
Year. Goes
really
too good. Late, too talented. You know, he's working with not a great situation last year, and he's a rookie. It's not always quite as easy as what Sam LaPorta made it look like last year. So again, I think we're kind of stipulating that Bowers, it's hard to see him falling past the Jets at 10. And I think that's a great fit. Conklin's a fine enough, like, complimentary tight end, but you need someone like Bowers.
He's 45
in that offense.
Grade.
Yeah. Yeah. A playable utility man type of guy. Do we think that, you know, that of this next tier of receivers, now that we've sorted that top three, you know, who stands out to you as fits for Brian Thomas and AD Mitchell?
I guess I'm a little lower on both of these guys than most people, but much more concerned about Brian Thomas. I think they're both going to be fine, you know, including Thomas, but you look at some of the comparisons people get in mind for these two guys, mostly on the basis of their height and their 40 times, and people start getting kind of carried away, I think, because, and I understand it, I, you know, 10, 12 years ago or something, all the discourse around wide receiver evaluation was like, you need to get Randy Moss, you need to get 6'3", 6'4", and a fast guy, and it made enough sense. There was certainly something to it, you know, like Calvin Johnson and guys like that. It's like, yeah, it seems like it's good when they're tall and really fast and freakishly athletic. Who could have imagined? But also, guys like Randy Moss and Calvin Johnson were incredibly skilled. You know, their tools grade was 80, sure, but they were also super skilled. Like, they weren't just workout guys. And Thomas is not just a workout guy either, but he is, I worry, just a fly and post route guy. And he may very well be one of the best in the league at those two routes. But if defenses know you're not a threat on other routes, they'll sort of just cut you loose on it. You know, he'll be the center that, you know, in basketball, you let him shoot the three pointer. You don't even try to guard him, you know, on, but in Thomas's case, it would be, he's running dig routes or a 5 yard slant or something like that. He wasn't drawing those routes at LSU. He just wasn't. And it could be, you know, totally good excuse for Thomas might exist with Malik Nabers, because Malik Nabers, if he's just, you know, sick, if he's the man, then Thomas can be excused for only drawing, I can't remember the exact number, but Thomas at LSU had about a 10 to 12 point target share leg behind Neighbors, and Neighbors is a little younger than him. So that just doesn't look that great, even if Neighbors is really, really exceptional. But in Adonai Mitchell's case, a little bit different. Like, he's not quite as tall. He's 6'2". He's a little, I'd say, sturdier build. Definitely better than Thomas at those routes that I just mentioned. You know, the more mundane routes, the ones that aren't always the big plays downfield. Like, Mitchell can make plays, some more of the routine plays than Thomas, I think. But I think he can match Thomas as a big play threat, too. I don't believe Thomas is better at those, you know, post and fly routes than Mitchell is. So I might be biased or missing something, but I think Mitchell is shaping up to be slightly better, or I don't know. I think Mitchell's quite a bit better as a prospect than Thomas. Thomas is actually more like a second round guy to me. So if the NFL agrees at all, then Thomas might slide a little bit further than Mitchell. And I think Mitchell, you know, we were talking about Denver trading back from 12. If Denver's kind of just, you know, toast for at least another year, then it makes sense for them to take a, you know, players that are raw, you know, even if they're not ready to be their full versions of themselves this year. It's fine for Denver because Denver is not doing anything this year. And in a trade back to something like 18, I think Denver would make a lot of sense for Adonai Mitchell in that case, because it's like they got to replace certainly Jerry Jeudy. It seems like they kind of want to get rid of Sutton too. If they're going to do that, and if they're going to maybe in the early second round trade up, I don't know, from the third, maybe using a 2025 first round pick or something like that to get Bo Nix or Michael Penix, then for that quarterback, they're going to want to have, you know, a receiver to kind of pair with them. And I think Mitchell makes a lot of sense. But for all the criticisms I just mentioned of Thomas, you know, being 6'3", pushing 210, running the 4.33 like he does, having the extreme efficiency that he did last year. I mean, he was doing like 14 yard a target and scoring a touchdown every 3.5 catches. He might be good enough at those posts and fly routes to make it worth it taking him in the first round. I just think that Thomas is more a guy that he should probably play in like a two tight end offense like Pittsburgh's, who have the 20th pick. So they might take Brian Thomas. That actually would be the very best offensive fit for him, I think, because when you have two tight ends on the field, you know, Freiermuth, Darnell Washington, they're not running go routes. They're not running posts. So if Thomas doesn't make an impact in that shallow intermediate over the middle part of the field, it doesn't matter if there's two tight ends there kind of like, you know, subsidizing the difference. And if Thomas does his part on those post routes and fly routes, he should have a lot of single coverage opposite George Pickens. So, and Russell Wilson actually is, if anything, he's good at those routes that Thomas runs. So it might be a good pairing for, you know, Russell Wilson and the Steelers, even if it's, Thomas isn't as good of a fit for other teams.
Yeah. A two wide set with Brian Thomas and George Pickens, like that's
the safeties won't like that. Yeah.
No, I don't think they'd care for it. Not one bit. So I'm in agreement where Thomas, he needs to land in the right spot in order to really be maximized. I mean, I suppose you can say that about anyone, but you know, I think that there's some fairly significant downside. Like if he were to go somewhere and get miscast, I don't know if he's complete enough to really like overcome that necessarily. And then let's look towards the back of the first round before we move on over to tight ends. Between Buffalo, Baltimore, and Kansas City, with the projected remaining receivers, you know, with Adonai Mitchell and Brian Thomas likely off the board at this point, you know, who's next?
My next pick would be Ladd McConkey out of Georgia, but this is a range, both in terms of the wide receiver pool and the draft order, where the pick, the order that these players get picked could be highly subject to the specific roles that the teams picking are looking for, you know, and the kind of players they already have on their team. I can't tell if Baltimore doesn't take a tackle, an offensive tackle, as it seems like Jordan Morgan from Arizona is being heavily linked to the Ravens in the first round. If they weren't taking Morgan and they were taking a receiver, I can't tell if Ladd McConkey would be exactly who the Ravens would be preferring, you know, especially because as like an not exactly big and kind of more slot than boundary receiver, McConkey might be a little bit redundant to Zay Flowers. They might be the similarly good at too many similar things for the two to be deployed at full capacity at the same time. Also, the Ravens don't have an actually like big receiver. Even Bateman, he's skinny. You know, they don't have a big receiver. So, if you're the Ravens, or even if you're the Bills, of course, you know they let Gabe Davis walk. They traded Stephon Diggs. They only signed Curtis Samuel. So their top two receivers are Curtis Samuel and Khalil Shakir. Those guys are both slot horizontal oriented, especially Shakir, in my opinion. They're more like slot horizontal oriented players. Maybe the Bills, like the Ravens, would have less use for McConkey than someone like Keon Coleman, or even, and I wouldn't like this pick for either team, or even Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina. Because like, if you think of that Gabe Davis role that Buffalo, in my opinion, has clearly misused Gabe Davis with over the years, making him run just, you know, 15, 16 yard average depth of target routes. Gabe Davis was bad at that because he's not fast. Like if you want to access those depths efficiently, you need to have speed. He didn't have it. He didn't get there when they needed him to get there. There were all these, you know, rhythm issues as a result. Xavier Leggett might not be able to do anything but those kinds of routes that Gabe Davis ran, but he should be able to do them better than Gabe Davis did. So, you know, I think it would be kind of a sketchy pick for a guy with his profile. The issue with Xavier Leggett's profile is he only produced as a fifth year player. And it wasn't like he was pretty good and then really broke out as a fifth year player. He did nothing until he did a lot last year. And even last year in his tape, to me, he looks kind of laterally, especially his coordination seems a little sketchy to me. Going vertically, he actually seems to have pretty good start stop, better than I would expect anyway. But when you see him on plays where he has to go left and right, he starts to look like the floor is slippery or something. And I don't know if he can do much for teams from the slot or especially underneath wherever he's lining up. But Josh Allen really needs that, you know, that bomb target, you know, and they don't have anyone who can really do that, in my opinion.
What about Xavier Worthy?
Oh, right.
I mean, 2-1 speed.
I overlooked him. He's going to probably go. He'll probably go ahead of Ladd McConkey, Keon Coleman, and Xavier Leggett. The question is, will Worthy go ahead of guys like Aiden I. Mitchell and Brian Thomas? And he could. I think the Colts, if they can't get an offensive lineman like Talius Fuaga or Troy Fotnoe, maybe the Colts take Xavier Worthy at 15, or maybe they trade back a little bit and take him at like 22 or something like that. But yeah, now that thanks for mentioning him. I overlooked him. Worthy will go ahead of McConkey, I think, but I still think McConkey might be the better fantasy receiver, because as much as Worthy drew a lot of targets, including as a true freshman, Xavier Worthy drew a lot of targets at Texas, I don't know if he'll draw all those same targets in the NFL. You know, like some of those plays in college worked because with the 4.22 speed, Worthy could be, you know, a small, below average hands kind of receiver and still make it work because he was just so fast, no one could do anything at all.
Yeah,
about
who's
it.
Around him? Yeah.
But yeah, in the NFL, I think, much like Marquise Brown, actually, out of Oklahoma, it's like you probably want to knock this guy's target share percentage by about 10 points going from college to NFL, so that you're only using him on the routes that are very speed emphasis and really suit his abilities. Because at 165, you know, you can't give Xavier Worthy like 130 targets, in my opinion. Like, you got to give him like 100 and make them count, is what I think. So for that reason, I think McConkey, who by contrast could be a 100 catch player at his peak, might be the better fantasy asset, even though Worthy will go sooner.
So with Indianapolis as a potential fit there for Worthy, are you telling me my dreams of Alec Pierce becoming something are dead?
it could just as much be a bigger problem for Josh Downs. I mean, it's in the slot primarily that Xavier Worthy would line up. So we'll see. I do think Pierce has something. It's just kind of like the way the Colts in particular are built, they might need a little bit more from that rep, you know, because
sure.
I don't know. Michael Pittman's a 100, 110 catch kind of guy, obviously, but they don't have anyone at tight end, even though Anthony Richardson,
they have a ton of them.
Right. They have a ton of, I guess Jelani Woods could be okay. He's got to be better than Granson. But yeah, it's just that they don't really give Anthony Richardson a whole lot to work with, especially downfield, I think. And at the very least, a guy like Worthy will make a guy like Pittman a little more efficient, I think, because it's just not going to be quite as easy for defenses to have a safety hovering over the top.
And I think, yeah, just allowing Richardson and what he's good at throwing the ball, like that arm strength is pretty rare. Yeah. So you want to be able to access those depths, as it were. And Worthy gets there, and he gets there pretty quickly. So that's an interesting call. All right, I got my eye on Indy now as a potential landing spot for one of these top receivers in this class. And then lastly, Peter Schrager puts out a mock that every year around this time caused a stir with Jalen Polk as a first-round pick going to the Chiefs.
All right. So, granted, I did not see the Rashee Rice pick last year coming. I believed what pretty much all draft media assumed about Rashee Rice, which is like he's going in the fourth or the fifth or something like that. But there always was, I think, good reason to take Rice in the second round, and in hindsight, the first even, because he had no actual red flags at SMU. It was always just kind of it was hard to tell for sure what he was, and the tape was clunky because their offense was clunky, but he had really good production by most standards, and his athletic testing at the combine was excellent. So it was a little bit surprising of a pick, but I think it was pretty quickly an obviously justified one. But this is a round earlier that Schrager is projecting for Jalen Polk, and I'm sorry, Jalen Polk he's not worth a first round pick. And he's not anywhere near Rashee Rice as a prospect. So if Rashee Rice goes in the late second, to me, Polk is more like a fourth rounder. And he may very well go in the second or the third. It's just that to me, Jalen Polk, this is the Washington guy who transferred from Texas Tech. Jalen McMillan was actually the wide receiver two alongside Odunze in 2022. And I thought he did a better job of it than Polk did in 2023. And Polk only got that opportunity because McMillan got hurt in 2023. So yep. Polk did a great job, no doubt about it. I mean, his numbers were blistering production at Washington, but he was the wide receiver two, co-wide receiver two in an offense that already had Odunze, McMillan. So this is a player whose usage in college was already that of a wide receiver three type. And it's hard enough. Like a lot of wide receiver ones in college are wide receiver nothings in the NFL. Like it's not often that you see a guy be like no better than a McMillan type and then all of a sudden turn into a star in the NFL. Like that just doesn't really happen. So I think that was mostly Schrager. Not that he like didn't believe what he was saying exactly, but I think he knew it would generate a little discussion, and I think
sure.
he was willing to write it because he heard from someone that he trusted that like this team or that team really likes Jalen Polk a lot. They like him, you know, as much as this guy or that guy. And if you can kind of run away with things when you dwell on those kinds of flimsy nuggets like that. And I think it's more likely that Polk goes in the third round than the first, because I think at the NFL level, Polk, who is he's like 6'2", 200 or 205 or something like that, the low 4.5, 40. This is a guy who's primarily a jump ball kind of receiver. Like he didn't even separate in college that much. So if he's a lankier, not exactly fast, not separation, not a yards after the catch guy, then it sounds to me like we're talking about a Josh Reynolds kind of player. And that's like a 45 grade player. It's like good enough to have on your team, and guys like that, especially when you catch them on a favorable contract, it's good to have them on your team. but it's not worth chasing them, in my opinion.
No, and first round would certainly qualify as chasing. Let's shift our discussion over to the tight ends here as we get to the latter part of the show. So we've talked about Brock Bowers. I think everyone is keenly aware of who that guy is. But beyond him, I think Jatavion Sanders out of Texas is pretty much the consensus number two tight end in this class. And I think that's pretty warranted. You know, he was really productive during his time at Texas, especially in 2022 in his sophomore year. I've read some interesting stuff on him. I didn't realize that he was the number 13 overall player in his recruiting class. And he came out as an athlete, not a tight end specifically, and was before Tom Herman's firing, was going to play defensive end, I want to say.
I was going to say, that's like, I never heard of a tight end recruit ranked that high.
Yeah, not even Bowers was. You'd have to go to Isaac Nada to find one of those.
The goat.
Yeah. Whoopsie daisies. Well, nevertheless,
I don't think Jatavion is our next Isaac Nada exactly. I think he was a tiny, tiny bit disappointing at the combine. But the thing with Jatavion Sanders is he's young, and guys like him, not to say they'll always this will always be the case, but sometimes they test a little better, you know, at 22 years old than they do at 21 or 20 and a half or something like that. In any case, even if he doesn't have plus athletic tools or whatever, I still think Jatavion Sanders is a good athlete and certainly a good enough athlete given the skill set that he also has. Like this is not a guy who is just winning in college by out athleting everybody, but rather Jatavion Sanders is the kind of player who clearly, or in my opinion, Jatavion Sanders's production can only be explained by having probably above average skill set and maybe more than that. This is the same offense that had two guys who are probably going to go in the first round at receiver in this draft. So if Xavier Worthy and Adonai Mitchell are worth first round picks, and if Jatavion Sanders produced the way that he did on the same offenses as them at the ages that he did, then we're either talking, you know, an all-timer anomaly if things turn out poorly with Sanders, or more likely, we're looking at a player who just has a very clean prospect profile. Granted, with Sanders, you don't see the obvious like star power. You don't see him. He's not going to do like Vernon Davis stuff. But I was talking before the combine about how I thought Jatavion Sanders might be comparable to someone like Eric Ebron, but just better. And I still stand, but I still think that's basically the deal with him. It's like he's not going to be an all-decade guy, but he does a lot of the same like play setups that Ebron was used on, and he just has way better hands. Like Ebron was kind of just drop things all the time, and Sanders just has really clean production, like really great age adjusted production at Texas. And all those guys, Mitchell, Worthy and Sanders suffered from the quarterback play there. So to have such good numbers in terms of just not just the efficiency with Sanders, but considerable share percentages too. I mean, going on about if we were talking 16 games rather than the 13 and 14 games they played at Texas, we'd be talking about an 800-yard pace for Sanders next to two first-round NFL wide receivers with a bad quarterback. So I don't think Sanders if Sanders is not the second tight end selected, I think that's embarrassing for whoever whatever team is making the mistake.
I believe Sanders had a higher yards per target figure than both Worthy and Mitchell.
It was 9.9 last year. And in both of the last 2 years, he went well over 600 yards. So it's like this was a guy who was, especially when Xavier Worthy was struggling a lot in 2022, is like Sanders was largely the guy who was making up the difference for Texas.
Big time. I mean, that's what I think he set the program record for catches by a tight end in that season. I mean, he was great that year. So, I mean, I think we're hip to his game. Again, like you said, probably not a future star in the making, but in the right setup, or maybe not even necessarily in the right setup, I think that he's going to be productive. And I think he has like that fantasy skill set that we're looking for from the tight end. Speaking of Texas and age adjustment, Jared Wiley, former Texas Longhorn turned TCU Horned Frog, took basically until his fifth year to do much of anything. but he did have an impressive final season at TCU. So he's going to turn 24 in November. Again, didn't break out till his fifth season. That was his first year with over 25 catches. But, you know, again, very solid this past year. 8 touchdowns for him in an offense that was pretty busted.
Yeah, so like you said, Jared Wiley was once a pretty high recruit at Texas before he transferred to TCU. The thing that I don't understand here with the recent Wiley hype, I believe it was Tom Pelissero or some reporter like that was saying he might be the second tight end selected. That would be insane, in my opinion, for Jared Wiley to go ahead of not just Jachavian Sanders, but some other guys we're going to talk about in a minute here, because Wiley left Texas to get away from Jachavian Sanders. He knew that guy, who's like 3 years younger than me, is going to send me to the bench, and that's a wrap for me. So he went to TCU, and even at TCU that first year, he didn't do a whole lot. I mean, 245 yards in 13 games as a fourth. He might have even been like a fifth-year player. He's going to be a 24-year-old rookie, you know? Yep. Wiley has been in the college ranks a while, so in that 2022 season, for me to believe in Wiley as a starter anyway, I would have needed to see him put up 2023's numbers last in 2022. And instead, they're only about half. They're exactly half as good as his 2023 numbers. If you're a fifth or sixth year player putting up big numbers, I don't care. There's nothing before them either.
Right.
Yeah. So what we can say about Jared Wiley is the testing was definitely good at the combine, the low 4.6 40 at 6.6, and he is somewhat skilled as a pass catcher. I just worry that with Jared Wiley, he's not good enough at enough different kinds of routes and play setups that even though he might be good at some specialized task, when you put him on the field, you tell the defense that's why he's there, because they know he's not there for any other reason. And then if you're sitting on a play, if you know the play before it goes, you can shut down anybody. NFL defenses, if they know the play, it's just doesn't matter who you have. They're too good. And I think, therefore, Jared Wiley is pretty much another Dan Arnold.
Okay. So that the Dan Arnold comp, unwelcome if you're a big Jared Wiley guy. But you know what? That, I mean, it is what it is. I would take Theo Johnson, Penn State, yeah, over him, and Cade Stover.
Absolutely. Cade Stover is overlooked, I think.
So let's unpack those two from the Big Ten, then, starting with Theo Johnson. Classic Penn State guy. Numbers might not be crazy, but the workout numbers were certainly pretty impressive. 6'6", 259, runs the 4.57 in the 40, and his vert almost 40, broad jump over 10 feet, so a lot working there as far as the tools are concerned, but you know, the production lacking.
Yeah, and Theo Johnson's one of those Canadian guys who's a fifth year guy himself, I think, or at least he just turned 23 in February. So even though he's an underclassman technically, he's over aged as an NFL prospect. So that the age adjustment detail with Theo Johnson makes his already sketchy pass catching production look a little worse yet. And with all that said, I think Theo Johnson is going to be a useful NFL player. I just think he's going to be more useful in real life than in fantasy, because I can see him getting stuck with a lot of pass blocking work. He had the great combine, of course, really great numbers across the board, and he's a big tight end too. I mean, he's pushing 260, and he's a sub 4.6. He's got almost a 40 inch vertical. So this is plainly a great athlete, but the hands don't quite seem as like his coordination with his hands doesn't seem quite as good as his, you know, like running and jumping athleticism is, and being rather tall and kind of long strided. I don't know if he's ever going to be an underneath pass catching threat. I think he might be the kind of tight end who, he could be pretty good on plays like this, but I think you need to get him at least like 8 yards downfield and ideally pushing the seam a little bit where you can use his height and his reach and his speed to stress the defense, because I think underneath he might just have a little not quite good enough coordination to be like a quick hit tight end target. And if you can't draw those sorts of targets, that right off the bat, even as a starter in the NFL, I think will limit a tight end to something like the, you know, 55, maybe 60 catch kind of range. And I think that's probably Johnson's ceiling. The thing is, if Johnson ends up in a good enough offense, you know, a quarterback who's productive enough, he could be a pretty good red zone, like play action threat, because he at 260, he makes the defense prepare for the run. And he looks, at the very least, he's a aggressive blocker. Like he's a high motor guy. It's not like Johnson's yes. one of these lazy but athletic guys. It's like he's a high motor guy. And as a blocker, he's got good like lateral movement and stuff. So I could see him being the kind of guy who he hits the defensive end in the, you know, chips him off the snap and the play action and runs a fade route or something. And 6'6", 260 guy running a 4.57. Even if that safety knows exactly where he's going, it's tough to stop a 6'6", 260 pound person who's maybe faster than you when you're a lot smaller than them.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So like the tools are what's intriguing about Theo Johnson. I think it's completely fair and correct to point out the lack of production and the hands. You know, I'm looking at it. He had at least two drops in each of his final three seasons. And when the target
those
volume
fastballs like near the line of scrimmage, it's like he's got big mitts, but it's like he kind of just, I don't know, he needs like a little room to see it in, I think.
Okay, so got some work to do on that front. And like you said, an experienced player to be certain, enrolled at Penn State in 2020. Let's get on to one Cade Stover then. What is it that you like about him?
So the last time we talked about Cade Stover, I think we mentioned how Ohio State hasn't had pass catching tight ends in forever. Like they're always just the Jeff Hoyerman types, and even Jeremy Rucker, who the third round pick of the Jets a couple of years ago, he, I think, was one of the most active pass catchers among Ohio State tight ends in quite a while before him. And then Stover was just kind of way more productive yet. So, Ruckert was kind of a notable pass catching Ohio State tight end with 300 yards as a senior and 300 yards over the first the 2 years prior to that combined. Stover, by contrast, had 567 yards in 11 games this year at 11.1 yards per target, catching 41 of 52 targets. In 2022, also way better than any season of Ruckert's, Stover had 400 yards, five touchdowns on 49 targets in 13 games that year. The one thing with Stover is he is a little bit old for his class, or rather he's a lot old for his class. He's going to be 24 in June. So it's fair to worry, I think, in his case that his production was somewhat informed by just having an age advantage, but I don't worry quite as much in his case because he was productive in both of those seasons. It wasn't just the age 23 season, and his athletic testing was totally decent. So if Stover had, instead of a 4.65, ran a 4.75, then I worry a little bit more about the age being the explanation, because with a 4.65 40, which is very good for a tight end, and a very good one for a player as coordinated as Stover. Like whereas Theo Johnson, I don't think we can expect to get those short routes, those whatever digs and drags and all that. Stover is built for stuff like that. That might be what he's best at, actually. So if a guy's running a 4.65 and he's got great coordination for those kinds of routes, which I think Stover does, then the speed is the explanation rather than the age. Like it's 4.65. We know that works. You know that this is not a great hypothetical anymore. It's like, we know that 4.65 at tight end is pretty good. And I think probably the third round, maybe the fourth, is where Cade Stover goes. But if you're betting on someone in that range, I think he's got, for fantasy football and real life football both, I think for the category of third or fourth round tight end picks, he has one of the best profiles in that sample.
I was always a fan of his. He was a really nice value option in DFS.
Oh yeah, he had some big games.
Yeah, no, he absolutely did. And if you didn't want to pay up for Marvin Harrison and sink like a fifth year salary into one player, Stover right down to like 4,200 every single week. I know I'm going to get at least 11 points out of this. So I'm in on Stover as well. Let's grab a couple more here before we head out. Let's talk a little bit about my guy sticking in the Big Ten here, Tip Raymond. Unfortunately, I don't think he's going to be much of a fantasy asset. He was never really asked to do that, but he is 6'5" and 271 pounds. Runs a slightly faster 40 than Cade Stover. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he was efficient with his opportunities. Those were kind of my notes. But the catch rate was above the team average. Big, athletic. I think he's an interesting project. I'm wondering, you know, based on the lack of production at Illinois, is that him? Is that the offense? You know, what, you know, chicken and the egg type of thing. Could he have the pass? Does that athleticism portend potentially the usage of like a fantasy relevant role in the NFL, or is it just something where it's like he's pretty much another like a tackle that can occasionally catch a pass?
I worry it's more like the second thing, or at least I worry that's the way he'll be used, because that what you described, a tackle who can catch passes sometimes, is actually very valuable. It's not valuable in fantasy football. We want the guy who just plays tight end and just catches passes. But as a 270 pounder with workout metrics like he has, I mean, Raymond's a player I don't think that has ever existed before in NFL history, honestly. I mean, like there's been freak athletes at tight end, including some freak athletes at tight end who didn't do anything at all in the NFL, but none of them were 270 pounds. Like the closest thing it'd be like Adam Shaheen. And even he was like, it was like, yeah, he's fast and athletic for a huge guy, but it was still the 4.78 or something that he ran. You know, he didn't run it was a 4.64 rather, that Tip Raymond had at the combine. Yes. So also Raymond is still like 3 pounds heavier than Shaheen was. I know that's trivial, but it's just to say, it's like, this really is, I think, a combination of thresholds that has never been reached.
To quote Ricky from Trailer Park Boys, what kind of person's ever moved like that in the history of people?
What era of Trailer Park Boys was that? I thought I knew all
that's
the lines.
That's the great Sasquatch episode. Then they get scared that Julian's a Sasquatch. Pretty good.
Sam Squamch. It is crazy though, because if you for instance take Tip Raymond's profile on mockdraftable.com and switch it from tight end to receiver, his 10-yard split is actually slightly above average, even though, you know, he's 271 pounds. So this is a guy, all the same, the risk here is that Raymond plays a whole bunch of snaps, maybe even like 700 snaps for some team. He could be some team's starter in 3-down tight end. In the near future. Even if he does, the fact that he, as a 270 pounder, gets a certain personnel response from the defense means that anytime that Raymond is playing, the defense looks differently than it does any other tight end is playing, pretty much. And specifically, the defense might respond in a way that kind of puts more mass directly over Raymond so that they don't get run over wherever he is by leaving like a 230 pound outside linebacker over him, because he's probably faster than that guy and he's 40 pounds heavier than him. So that even if Tip Raymond is not like a great technical blocker, being 40 pounds heavier and faster than whoever you're chasing is just kind of like, you can bully them. So yes, if the defense puts heavier personnel in front of Raymond, then that might kind of tempt the offense, for understandable reasons, I think, into saying, okay, well, if they're going to pull up the safety and get slower at that rep, why don't we try to attack them deep? You know, like why don't we try to, if they're going to crash forward at Raymond, let's dare them to keep doing it and then attack them where they leave themselves thin. And I think it could work great. You know, having Raymond there, he could do a lot of things. Like you could be in a pass happy offense, or he could be almost like a better version of Tyler Higbee, maybe has been for the Rams. You know, it's like Higbee had some big games, of course, but primarily he was a guy who, while three other receiver routes were trying to run these, you know, somewhat ambitious McVay concepts, the tight end on most plays would initially be a sixth lineman for at least a chip purpose, and then maybe just like run into the flats as like a safety, you know, release kind of thing. And Raymond could do that for a team that throws the ball a lot. And in those situations, he really might be, you know, uncovered. It's like while the volume won't be on the table with him, he also might be the kind of guy that the defense forgets about at inopportune times. And if he runs a 4.64, it's, you know, that could be a high cost if you don't have someone ready to pursue right away. So this is all to say, I think Tip Raymond pretty clearly is a really good tight end prospect for real football purposes. And even for fantasy purposes, if he lands in the right offense, which is to say an offense that throws a lot of touchdown passes, he could get in on some of those touchdowns, but he's never going to be like a, I would be surprised if Tip Raymond ever has more than like 55 catches in a season, you know?
I would too. So not banking on that, but like it, if just it, if I'm a fan of any team picking in the middle rounds that, that doesn't already have their tight end room locked up, like I'd want him on my team. Like no question about it. One guy that you might actually want on your team for fantasy though, Ben Sinnott.
Yeah.
Preach it. Let us know.
So, he really might be kind of, you can't really say things like this, but he might kind of be a little bit like another Sam Laporta. That for me, in the process of evaluating the tight ends the last 2 years, it kind of was a similar, it was a similar pattern with both of them where I went into the draft process, not aware of either one really, and not expecting to have to care about either one. But in Laporta's case, it's like I did the dreary task of, you know, let's pull up the film, and it was actually really good. And I was like, what the hell is going on here? And then he had the really good combine. And I was like, okay, well, wait a second. If his numbers are actually really good at Iowa and his athletic testing is actually really good by any standard, maybe he actually is that good. And maybe it's not just, you know, a case of chasing the shiny thing and falling for the little novelty or whatever. But Sinnott was kind of a similar thing. It's like, I never care about Kansas State. You never care about Kansas State. They're not a fun offense to watch. Not since Darren Sproles, anyway, has Kansas State been
Deuce had his moments, but yeah.
Deuce had his moments, that's true. But those guys aside, it's like, when they don't have like a 5'6" running back, Kansas State sucks to watch.
Awful.
And Ben Sinnott was not someone I expected to care about, but when they looked at took a glance at the stats, totally productive last year. I mean, it was he had to be like a 19 or a 20% target share or something like that, and was above the team baseline, I think, for both catch percentage and yards per target. He was their lead receiver too overall. I think Sinnott might have been their leading pass catcher. So if those stats are indicative of his skill set, then Sinnott has skill as a receiver. Yeah, he led them with 676 receiving yards on a team that threw for 3,135. So,
what do you think, Will Howard? By the way, you think he's going to be good at Ohio State?
Will Howard? Sorry,
that's the quarterback.
I don't know who that is actually.
Well,
oh, he's their quarterback at Kansas State.
Holes in the Ohio State national championship. But I'm
super ignorant on this transfer portal era.
I get dizzy by all
the changes happening, but I'm not expecting Will Howard to be up to the usual Ohio State standard. It's just one of those things that that you don't end up at Kansas State if you're rarely anyway do you end up at Kansas State if you meet the Ohio State standards. However, Ben Sinnott would be an exception, I think. I think even though I like Cade Stover a lot, Ben Sinnott is probably better at pass catching than Stover. Stover might be a little better as a blocker. I never have a great read on that, but Sinnott, when you watch the tape, it was a little bit like Laporta, where it was like, I'm surprised how entertained I am by this. I thought I would be watching just shenanigans, but Sinnott made quality plays, and you know, it's not easy to lead a team in receiving production as a tight end, and he did it by a pretty notable degree. You know, the second closest guy wasn't even really that close. So Sinnott did all that indicates good things about his skill set. And then at the combine, he had one of the best workouts. So not quite as good as Laporta, as Laporta had the 4.6 flat or the 4.59 or whatever. So Sinnott a bit slower at 4.68. However, the 10-yard split is a little better. 1.59 is an 81st percentile versus 70th percentile for the 4.68. And 40-inch vertical, 126-inch broad jump, those are elite figures. And the agility testing with Sinnott was also great. So the numbers are great. The athletic metrics are great. And when you turn on the tape, it makes sense how he got those numbers. Like Sinnott just pulverizes people as a runner. And he's elusive too. Like when he catches the ball, and this is a weird thing to say and a weird thing to see too, but it's like watching Mike Allstott catch 5 passes in a game, and then he turns into Mike Allstott when he has the ball as a runner. Like he, including he looks like he's hunched over for some reason, and it's just weird. I don't remember anybody looking quite like him, but if teams don't get creeped out by just how he doesn't seem to look familiar, then Sinnott, you know, we saw with Laporta, he went into the draft generally projected as like a third round pick or a fourth round pick or something, and the optimist's scenario turned out to be entirely correct with him. And I don't think Sinnott is quite near that level, but if some team took Ben Sinnott at like 40th or 45th or something, it would be a little unexpected, but I'd be like, hell yeah, brother.
Yeah, it'd be, you know, something that ends up aging well. So you've been on the scent for Sinnott since the early part of the pre-draft process, and obviously stamped it with the combine. So I think that he actually makes this tight end class, you know, something that going into the combine was just Bowers and some guys. I think that there's some actual depth here with you know, potential for you know, handful of actual fantasy assets as we move forward. So, you know, you don't have to just be worried that after the first round it's over for these tight ends. I think there are some guys to keep an eye on. Sinnott, absolutely one of them. Sanders, yeah, Tip, I suppose not really for fantasy, but Theo Johnson, definitely interesting. Cade Stover, interesting as well.
In like tight end premium or two tight end leagues, don't overlook Eric All. He might kind of have to be a bit of a red shirt from his knee. He had like an ACL in week six or something like that.
Yes.
But if he hadn't gotten hurt, he might have been in that second, certainly the third round conversation. He might be in the third round conversation anyway. So I would be surprised if All fell past the fourth, for instance.
Yeah. Before Michigan got like really, really good, All was kind of, I'm not going to make that pun, but you could use noticeably good, I would say. So it's unfortunate the college career ended that way. First of all, having to go and play in the Iowa offense, but I suppose you play with your old quarterback, Cade McNamara, but then you get injured. Tough break there. But keep an eye. Eric All is the name as your sleeper. I like that. But that's going to do it for us here on this here edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Again, presented by our good friends over at On Demand DFS and over at Blue Wire. If you want to check out our free trial, it's a good week to do it. You know, baseball season, we're in phase. You got to make some free agent moves. So we have the right ideas for you on that. We got rest of season projections, rankings, all that good stuff. And yeah, it's the NFL draft. Mario and I are going to be doing a ton of stuff. We're also going to have pretty much wall-to-wall coverage next week. I know I'll be dropping a mock and a betting piece. I know our guy Joe Bartle is going to be dropping a betting piece as well. We'll be recapping from a fantasy perspective each day of the draft. That'll be myself, Joe, and Jerry Donabedian. Mario's going to be in the trenches with me, writing up player notes on all, what is it, 256 picks in the draft? Something like that?
I think it's 450, actually.
By the time Saturday afternoon rolls around, like my brain feels more like oatmeal than it usually does. It's pretty beat up by that point, but our notes
are good. They somehow age better than the other ones.
They do, you know,
the whatever, you know.
We've been doing anyway this for years.
You'll have to see.
So you're gonna want to check that out. How do you do it? Get a little free trial if you're not already signed up. rotowire.com/pod. Again, that's rotowire.com/pod. From Mario Puig, I'm John McKechnie. Thanks for listening.